You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 284. This week, we talk about Rosalie Lightning. Visit welcometocomics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now, the cast begins.
Have any witty banter?
Nah. I'm very tired. So
okay, we can get into it. There's just two things. One thing I want to say is Toy Fair was this last weekend or week, which is just like a big convention for toys. And Hasbro showed a bunch of stuff. They showed their new 40th anniversary for Star Wars line, and it's pretty much just like reproductions of all of the harder to find Star Wars toys, like Han Solo, the new Princess Leia, a good Vader. An R2-D2 R2-D2 in the aftermarket now is like $50, which is insane. So they're just rerunning basically, with fancy packaging and spiffing them up. But Hasbro also does Marvel, and Hasbro has a pack for A-Force, which is notable given the state of gender in toys, that this is an all-female action figure pack, and every figure in the pack is a brand new figure, like figures that have never been made. So
that's
it's like
cool.
It's double triple awesome. It's good for collectors. It's good for the like gender representation in toys. It's awesome that there's an A-Force pack. Who is in it? Oh, it's the one I was really shocked to see is the woman from who was the like monster hunter in Next Wave?
Oh, Elsa Bloodstone.
Yes, she's in it with two shotguns.
That's awesome.
And they're like, yeah, that's sick.
That is
the other thing I'll say that's kind of related. To today's comic, today for the first time. So my daughter, has always just called my wife Mama. But I've called my wife something else, hoping that it would catch on. So today my daughter for the very first time called my wife Moogie.
Yes.
Nice.
Boogie.
Did you want to talk
right.
into that?
It's happening.
How did you encourage that, or did it just happen naturally?
Well, I just people say like, go give that to Mama, give that to Mother. I say give that to Moogie.
Oh,
you know,
nice.
Like I refer to her as Moogie.
Okay.
And despite my wishes, nobody refers to me. Like, I want her to call me father, and everybody just, like, laughs at that. I'm like, no, I really do. Like, Dada is super informal, and my daughter can do it. My daughter says Moogie. My daughter can do father. It's not a whole lot different. It's not crazy.
That's cool.
But, yeah, I was, like, so psyched that she did Moogie finalistic. It's happening! Yes! She's always been like super, super timid about doing it. But yeah, we're trekking the whole shit up.
Nice.
That is cute.
And I couldn't be happier about it.
Oh yeah. So,
all right.
Wait. Okay. So people who follow our Facebook page, or maybe me on Facebook or Instagram, have noticed that I've been working on, well, it'll be done by the time you hear this episode, but I've been working on the Gunpla kit that Superfan Raymond sent us. It'll be done by the time you hear this episode, so this might not be a surprise, but, I don't remember how long ago Raymond gave this to us, but it was a while ago, and I'm finally, I'm almost done now, but, it's looking pretty cool. So, yeah, look out for that, Raymond, and thank you again. It's been really fun to build this one.
It's so cool that we got a fan who sends us something. I like still lose my shit thinking about it. And I have absolutely no announcements about our presence at SVCC or Fanime. But Fanime is super lax. I'm sure we're going to get a panel for that.
Oh, if any of our listeners happen to be at Star Wars Celebration in April, in Orlando. I will be sitting at the Mandalorian Mercs table on Thursday from 12 to 2 at the information area. If you want to come say hi and ask me about Star Wars costuming, specifically about Mandalorian Mercs, I will be there. So,
God, I wish I was going with you.
I've heard rumors that it's going back to Anaheim in 2019. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, we'll go to that one for damn sure.
Yeah, definitely. And if you're at SVCC, I will probably be at the Mandalorian Mercs booth there at some point during the weekend. And I'll probably be in costume at some point, too. Well, I'll definitely be in costume at some point. But, yeah.
Yeah. Because your kid is fucking sick.
Yeah, I'm excited. I got to do some upgrades to it so it'll last the weekend or the convention. But I'm pretty excited. Still trying to figure out how to ship it to Orlando. I think what I'm going to do is just buy like a hard suitcase. And it doesn't actually take up that much room. So I think I'll just put it in a hard suitcase and ship and check it and pay the extra baggage. Because I was thinking of actually shipping it to the place we're staying. But I'm a little nervous about that. So I don't think I'll.
Yeah, that feels a lot riskier than just packing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You guys ready to talk about this week's comic?
Yes.
This week's comic.
Yeah?
I guess so.
All right. This week we read Rosalie Lightning by Tom Hart. And, goddamn. I'll tell you my experience reading this. I read this at work because apparently I'm terrible at time management and waited until the last minute to read it. And that was a bad decision. But luckily my work is two blocks from the daycare where I send my daughter. So I was like halfway through this and I was like, fuck, I need to go give her a hug super bad.
Yeah,
So I took my lunch break and went and hugged my daughter and then came back and finished reading the rest.
Yeah, my kids were, I read it on, at night after my kids went to bed, and I went and laid down with my daughter after I read it.
Oh. Yeah, man, this shit, like, gets you right in the fucking gut.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking. It really was.
But yeah. I think it's important to read. Like, and I typed this out more eloquently in notes, but I think it's important because, well, like, I don't want to know what this feels like, and I don't want anybody to have to know what this feels like, but I think it's important to understand. Like, I can't empathize. There's no way I can possibly come close to feeling what Tom Hart and Leela went through. There's no way I could possibly know what that feels like. But to understand even a little bit through this amazing work of art, like, it's important to read stuff like this, even though it punches you in the gut, because it makes you it makes you a better person, I think. It makes you appreciate life more and appreciate what you have so much more than before you read it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I like you said, Andy, I can't imagine what it's like to go through this, but and as heartbreaking as this is, it really is a work of art, because I think it talks about a aspect of the human condition that a lot of people fortunately won't have to experience. But it does give you a window into an aspect of life that is, you know, if you do experience it, it's something that's like indescribable, you know. As heartbreaking as this graphic novel was, I think that it probably is just a tip of the iceberg, you know. Probably a lot of things that parents go through when they experience something like this, it's indescribable, you know. And I think Tom Hart does a, it sounds weird saying this, he does a good job of kind of showing by describing the things that he and Leela did in the wake of their tragedy, you know, like walking around and just, you know, having no direction really, except for these forces in their life that don't stop because, you know, in spite of their tragedy, the world keeps turning, right? And they have to, like, deal with the house selling and, you know, figuring out, because, you know, their life is going to continue without Rosalie, unfortunately, and that's something that that has to be addressed, whether you want to or not, or have the motivation or the drive to keep going. And I don't know. I'm not sure where I'm going with that, but
well, you mentioned two things I want to talk about a bit more. And one was the selling of the condo, which, and I realized as you're talking about it, that might be another reason why this comic, hit extra home for me. Cause that's the way I like the way they talk about like New York is a lot of the way I feel about San Jose right now. Like having to make so much money to be able to afford just the apartment, like the rat race that it's taken to just stay here as a renter, is a little crazy. So the idea that like just it's this constant loop, and the reason that they couldn't sell is because that it didn't sell for enough and they wanted them to sell it for more. Mm-hmm. And like sit on the market more, and like I don't know of that happening, but my God, I can see it happening here. I can see it happening so hard.
Yeah.
The other thing you brought up was them walking around, and I want to talk about the art in those scenes, because I think this is what Tom Hart does really, really well here. Is the first couple chapters, he uses the art to set up a frame of reference that gets called back to over and over in a way that you don't necessarily notice all the time, but has an impact as you keep reading. So like in the beginning, he talks about, you know, the Stark ink, and then you, in order to get the rain, you drag the blade through it. All right. There's a, I think it's like chapter two or something. And it's the heaviness of the ink and what that means, and the heaviness now reflects mood. And then when they go for walks, they are like in just black, like just, you can almost see him like just taking the black marker and just going on the page, you know, and it's great because every time that I mean, it's not great. It's, I mean, this is the problem with talking about a comic like this. It all refers to something terrible.
Right. It is a challenge because it's a high quality graphic novel, but it's hard to it's not hard, but it seems strange to praise something that is so heartbreaking, right?
Yeah. But I like that one got to me, because you mentioned the walking, and just like it's just like scribbles of black ink. And the other one is like the paisley counters that Rosalie loved, and then that comes back later as like tree leaves, again and again. I don't know, just the little stuff like that. He does a really good job of building that narrative in the beginning and carrying it through and making it hit over, and like he just keeps hitting that nail in you every time it comes up.
Yeah. Or like chapter 5 was very visually amazing, because that's the one where it's just really dark, and then he has these circles that show these little like vignetted moments, and he ends the previous chapter by saying, like, you know, you fall into a hole. So like in one way, it is that literal sense. You're looking up from being kind of like in this hole of grief, but it's also the way that these moments, they're just isolated and you can only catch little glimpses of them. I think as a reader, you know, that's very illustrative of how this works. Like, he, Tom Hart, has the entire picture. He understands, like, how monumental this is, and the rest of us only can see these tiny bits that he, like, shows us. We don't, like someone else's grief and loss is in a lot of ways like inscrutable or like impenetrable to the outside world. Because, you know, as you said, like we can sympathize, we can say, you know, like that's really painful, but it's an experience that like he and his wife are the only ones who like understand the full brunt of that. And I thought he showed that really well with his art.
Yeah, and that's another thing he keeps coming back to as well. Like there's a scene where they're in the airport and he's like looking around and imagining all the problems of everyone else there, and visually too, he comes back to it later, like when they do the sweat lodge, and every time the door opens, he just sees the portrait of Rosalie and the moon, and he just sees it like every couple hours when they open the when they open the flap, and it's like that, just that little like window into the grieving, like that is a theme that just keeps coming up over and over and over. Nailing you every time he does it too, motherfucker.
The narrative in this is very disjointed and you know, like not just in time but also kind of he uses a lot of, you know, different panel techniques. Like, you know, he starts out in a very kind of traditional, you know, like the square rectangular panels, very sequential, but then he also goes through and, you know, goes into the like little hole panels, and the story itself is disjointed, but I think it makes a good point in doing that, in that like it, I would assume that after such like a loss, one would feel that disjointed. Like you wouldn't feel like together in your head, I suppose. And like I feel like just the way that this kind of jump back and forth between memory and present and what's going on, and, you know, speculation about, you know, the apartment and trying to cope with grief and remembering Rosalie's life, that is just kind of like a direct impression from what's going on, you know, in Tom Hart's head onto the page. And it's not going to be neat. It's not going to be an easy to follow narrative, because that's not what that experience looks like.
Dude, even in the present, it feels disjointed because they go from location to case location so much. Like when they decide to leave Gainesville because they can't stand it in that house anymore, like they go from there to the couple, I can't remember their name, and then they go to the dude who was in the accident, his place, and then they go from there to the grief place in New Mexico, and then
Hawaii.
They go back to Jeff's, and then Hawaii, and then there's the sweat lodge, and it's like
the sweat lodge was in New Mexico.
Was in New Mexico. I just like, yeah. There's so many, I couldn't even keep track of all the places. Like it feels like they were like their journey for meaning afterwards, created that disjointed part in me too. Like I couldn't follow everywhere they were going. Like just, they were searching everywhere for an answer. And I was like, I don't even know what the fuck is going, like, where are we today?
And what's kind of interesting is he uses the symbol of these two characters floating down a river on a raft, right? Kind of looking for meaning, looking for a place to land, and they just realize they're aimlessly drifting. But these characters, like, you know, come to represent him and his wife, and he keeps bringing them back over and over. But that's not what this journey is. This is not linear. He's not just aimlessly drifting through linearly. And I don't know. I thought that was like a really weird, or it's an interesting comparison. The kind of aimlessness that you feel, I don't know, before something catastrophic happens. And then like the fact that like aimless wandering after that is just not, it doesn't make as much sense. I don't know. I think I'm just trying to draw a lot of symbolism out of this because I don't know. That's all I got.
I think there is some symbolism, I guess, but it's, I think when we as like English majors and literary critics talk about symbolism, a lot of times it's, I think, intentional on the part of the author, but I feel like the way the symbolism manifests itself in this story is unintentional. It's not unintentional, but it's natural. Because it's, instead of saying, okay, this color represents this feeling, and because it's like on a shirt that this person's wearing, it's, they are experiencing that emotion or something, right? But here, yeah. It's the things that are being experienced by the author are things that, these are things that he experienced or that came into his mind as he was going through this trauma in his life. And so it doesn't feel forced or even open to interpretation in the same way that like literature symbolism is. There are symbols, or there are things that Tom Hart brings up that represent things to him, but it's not really open for interpretation in the same way that other literature is, because he's telling us, you know, we went through this event came up and it reminded me of this cartoon of the couple on the raft, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it is representative of him and his wife, but it's not, they're not really forced into that, or it's not vague in the same way that sometimes symbolism is.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I am so sorry I almost cut you off three times, but because I'm so excited, because that's such a good point, David. Like this is not like the use of color in Sin City, which is like deliberate and planned and structured and has a purpose that the author wants to get. Like, it's not like that at all. Like, this is just him saying, I don't know any other way to express how this felt to me, so I'm just going to do this. Like, it feels like it's from a much more organic place that even the author doesn't understand why that's the metaphor he's reaching for, mm-hmm. or why that's the way he's choosing to draw. Just that's the way it comes out of him. Like, it's a much more raw emotional use of symbolism that is probably just a connection in his own head. Like, it's not like, I'm going to put this in an outline and say the use of red here indicates violence. Like, no.
No.
That's not happening here.
Right. Like, I think the vast majority of readers would arrive at the same interpretation no matter what their personal experience is. Not necessarily with this type of trauma, but, you know, everybody goes through things in their life, and we have reminders or we draw conclusions based on certain things. But I think everybody, not everybody, but like most, the vast majority of people will arrive at the same types of conclusions when reading this, because it just makes sense, right? I'm not sure if there's there probably is a better way to say it, but the symbols make sense. And I think it's things that, everybody can relate to on some level. You know, people have felt lonely or felt despair or sadness to varying degrees. And so they all can see the symbolism in these different, images that Tom Hart uses in telling his story, right?
Yeah, and there's, mm-hmm. God, I wish this comic, I wish I could have read this before I had kids, and now, because I know no other way to come to this text, this work, other than as a father. Like, I cannot, there'd be no possible way for me to set that aside while I read this. my imagination would say, well, maybe I could come at this that, you know, it's the loss of a loved one and the grieving process of somebody really close to you. And in that way, sure. But I think it is fundamentally different in a lot of ways, because this reminds me a lot of Why Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant by Roz Chast, which we did a couple years ago. And that is also another phenomenal comic about a really hard time in somebody's life. But the tone of that is really different because those people went through the natural life process. There wasn't this complete abrupt end. That's just so, I can't even remember the words that he uses, just so damaging, so violent. Like the not that she died violently, but the immediate violence of the grieving, and the trauma, like that's not present in Why Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant. So it's difficult for me to imagine how somebody without a kid would come to this. But God, I wish I could have. I wish I could have done it before and after.
Yeah, I agree with that. It definitely, being a parent definitely colors your perspective, because I think you can, I don't want to say, a part of me wants to say that you can more closely relate, but I don't think you really can, but you can identify more so with Tom and Leela because if you have a child, your life is so fundamentally changed because of the presence of the child that, like, it's hard for me to imagine my kids not being around anymore. Yeah. So.
And I mean, and the moments in this comic that I connected to are the ones that I connect to as a father now. Like, the one that got me the most is when there's a couple scenes when they're like working on the wife's book and selling the house, and they're like busy with the adult stuff, and it's constantly distracting them from spending time with Rosalie, or Rosalie. And then when they finally get time, it turns out it's the fucking corn maze bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, and when they finally are able to try and make time, it fucking goes terrible. And like, like that stuff got to me perfectly, because I feel like I come home and I do chores and I get the house and then I get the baby down. Like, I'm just constantly in this mode of trying to just maintain, like, stay above water. And when I do find time to do something with her, like, I go to the bookstore, and as soon as I pull up there, this happened. As soon as I pull up to the parking lot of the bookstore, she lets out this giant shit that just gets all over the chair. And then I go in my diaper bag and I realize I'm out of clean diapers. So I've got to drive from Campbell to home with my daughter, like, swimming in her own shit. Cause it was I'm like, the one time I finally cut out a fucking hour for my daughter to do something I think she's going to find fun. Like, it cannot work. And what's amazing is that, like, that's a terrible experience and it's so frustrating, but like, it's like that experience is, it's so emblematic of parenthood and just the idea that, like, the mutual struggle, because I know she was not having a good time either. The mutual struggle brings people together, no matter how old you are. Like, you go through shit together. Like, not like literal shit, but that helps. But if you go through shit together with somebody, it doesn't matter how different from you they are. You get a connection with them. And man, that corn maze. That whole thing was great. That whole scene. I mean, it was sucked for them, but like, I'm like, yeah, that's about right. Nothing goes right. What about you guys? Did you guys have a part in this that you... I don't want to say what was your favorite part of this, but did you guys have a part of this that stuck with you more than anything else? David, you and I are talking a lot. I want to hear from Jen.
Okay.
I want to out her.
I mean, the end, I thought was really well done, where he's just kind of like reflecting on, like, he gets the call from the guy at the laundromat who's just like flipping out about it, and the dude like remembers her name, and it goes into this like, you know, this is who she was, and it just goes into yes, yes, yes. And really early on, he talks about a, I think, Buddhist mantra, like a meditation that he performs.
Ooh, yeah.
Where he's like, you know, on the exhale,
that.
With each step, you take a walk and say yes with each step. And on the inhale, you walk and with each step say thank you. And here it ends with, you know, yes, 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 Rosalie. And it's like the shape of that mantra changes from thank you to his daughter's name. And that's just, that's a really beautiful moment.
Yeah, that's pages 59 and 60. And I did not even connect that when that happened at the end. And holy shit, that's awesome.
Yeah, I miss that too.
See, Jen, this is why I call you out, because you're fucking genius.
Sorry, it's like just super early in the morning here. I'm like, oh.
I get it. What about you, David?
Oh, man.
Now that Jen has effectively embarrassed us both after we tried to sound smart for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, Jen's going to go so I can try to think of something, and I did not think of something.
Oh.
I don't know. It's... it's hard to say, like, pick some, think of a spot or pick a spot that, like, really stood out. Because to me, this is going to sound like a bit of a cop-out, but to me, like, the reading of the whole comic was a bit of an experience. You know, like, I mentioned, well, both of us mentioned about, you know, our, you know, how we might feel or if we lost our kids, right, Andy? But I mean, I kind of knew what this was about, right, before we read it. And even when you got to the part where he talks about where he first talks about Rosalie passing away, like it was a shot to the gut. But you know, the disjointed narrative made me think, like, every once in a while, well, the story was going to end, and part of me felt some relief, right, that the story was wrapping up, and then it kind of curved back in on itself, and you visited a lot of these same places over and over again, you know. You see physical places in the story, but then also beats of the story you come back to. And it was like exhausting on some levels to read this. So I got the Kindle version, and it's, you know, there's page numbers in the corner, but the way Kindle lists their, your progress is like locations and percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I wasn't looking at the page numbers, and while you're actually going through the book, you don't see your progress necessarily. And so I was never really sure where I was. And that made me kind of feel like I didn't know how long this was going to go on. And that sounds like a little bit, maybe selfish, because, you know, I am not the person going through this horrible experience. But at the same time, like, because there is so, it's so emotionally charged, part of me wanted to get out of the story because it takes a toll, right? So didn't answer your question at all, but I feel like I needed to get that experience out there.
No, I think that did. I think you answered in your own way. It's okay. It's all, this is the thing. Like, I feel like we can have debates about other comics, but this one, you read it and it's kind of just the experience of the emotion that it brings out. And, on the one hand, you could say, well, it's that we're giving this comic a pass because of the author's trauma, and we're not doing the critical reading that we normally do. Not that we're like assholes when we do readings of comics, but we aren't afraid to talk about the things that we feel like could have been done better or the things that were missed. Because we all three of us enjoy literature and want the best story possible. And it's easy to armchair quarterback. But this doesn't necessarily get a pass. It's just that this is so good that it brings forward those emotions, I think. And I think the fact that it's good, you don't have to talk about.
One thing that I noticed, I'm flipping through it again, and one thing that I've noticed that there's little moments that occur that as they're starting to unfold, they seem like they're going to be like relevant, but then they end up being kind of like, oh, this happened, and then the story continues. Like, for example, when they're going to the grieving retreat in New Mexico, you know, their car gets stuck going up the hill, and there's like the dogs running up to the car, and you know, in the art, the dogs look very terrifying, and they're like barking at the car, and then, you know, Tom gets out of the car to try to get unstuck and
try and get out of the mud.
And the dogs, these scary dogs, have like no bearing really. It's just part, they're like part of the scenery. That's the real conflict, I think, is the car being stuck in that scene. He brings up the dogs and he draws them, and they look kind of scary in the art, but they don't really have any bearing on anything, except, you know, after Tom gets back in the car, he draws one more panel with the dogs, and the dogs are just sitting there looking at him. They're no longer barking or chasing him. It's like, once the dogs got out of the car and
they kind of became like.
Then they're just Manny's dogs.
Yeah, they. There was like no resolution with the dogs, and I feel like probably it's just a detail that stuck out in Tom's mind, maybe. And so when he was remembering these events and putting them down, he said like, "Oh, there were dogs came running up and were barking at us." Mm-hmm. But then the dogs were, like, irrelevant after that.
Yes. So I have to say that one of the other things that stuck with me, and I think it's kind of funny, is when Leela is talking about right when the baby was delivered, Leela says, "When I first saw her in the delivery room, I knew I was fucked. I was always fearful something would happen. All I could feel was her vulnerability. I knew she was going to die." And that's not really funny. Maybe I used the wrong word there. But, like, it's a really weird feeling. One that I kind of relate to. And I think women who give birth have more of a feeling of it than I would. But that feeling of, like, my God. so weak, so helpless. I could fuck this up. Oh, no.
Oh, you know, one thing, now that we're talking about it a little bit, one thing that kind of, that was interesting was when they were talking about, like, the night before she passed away, mm-hmm. and how she was saying up, and how they were, like, they thought that she knew on some level. That, oh, man, that was particularly heartbreaking, like trying to not rationalize it, but like put some meaning or make it seem not so random, you know? I don't really have anything to say about that other than that it really was particularly heartbreaking. You know, seeing them trying to, I don't know, remove some of the randomness. I'm not sure. I don't have really a better way to put it than that.
Yeah. trying to, like the whole, did she know, did she...
Yeah.
Did she see it? And it's like, yeah, you can't. God, don't do that to yourself.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that to yourself, but you know you can't help it.
You know, throughout it, too, like, as they're going to New Mexico, he makes hero's journey comparisons. Like, the idea of passing from, like, the old world into the new, you will find guardians, you will find a sage teacher, a mentor. And I thought that was interesting because I think, again, he's, like, trying to put some meaning to this.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's also trying to transfer it from some of the stories that Rosalie liked, like Totoro and Ponyo. It's like, man, my daughter is 14 going on 15 months, and Rosalie was almost 2 years, and she was watching Miyazaki. I'm like, fuck, I cannot wait for that. I cannot wait to watch Miyazaki with my daughter. And have her come close to understanding any of it.
My kids really, Lucas really likes Ponyo. He's seen Howl's Moving Castle and Kiki's Delivery Service also. I don't think he's watched Totoro yet, but he really likes Ponyo.
Man, I gotta buy that shit on Blu-ray. Keep it.
Yeah.
Like, I was so, like, down for, I don't need discs, I got Netflix. And now Netflix is like, we're taking Clone Wars off. And I'm like, what? No, Disney, why would you do that?
You can go onto their, help, like, Netflix is, we're going way off the rails now here.
That's fine.
You can go on Netflix's, help, or, like, their support site, and, put down TV shows or movies that you want to keep or suggest for them to try to get. And so you could put Clone Wars on. Because if they get enough people to, like, say they want it, sometimes it can help in their negotiations for licensing in the future.
Good looking out.
Interesting. Yeah.
Good to know.
I don't know if it'll help, but I put I logged in and put down Clone Wars.
That's a pro tip these listeners weren't expecting to get in this episode.
I can't take credit for that because I received that pro tip from Reddit. It was actually in the Clone Wars subreddit on Reddit.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Go.
Oh, I was going to say, like, usually at this point in the episode, we would, like, talk about rating it. I don't know if I
am comfortable. I don't want to rate it. Yeah, I do not. And I'm really glad you brought that up because I didn't. Like, I just do not.
I don't think us applying a subjective number to this is going to add any value. I think people, or our listeners, got our opinion from, you know, from listening to us talk about it. So I don't think giving it
I'm going to give this 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah, it's like, then you're... Now try defending that. Why did you take that half point off, Andy?
Because I'm an asshole, and I feel like this guy could have gotten over it faster.
For anyone who can't tell, Andy's being sarcastic there.
Yes. God, oh God, am I.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyways. You guys have any closing thoughts, then? I'll say that.
I feel like... I hope that Tom Hart got some level of catharsis from creating this piece of art, you know, because I hope that he got something positive from relaying this experience to people, you know. That's my only closing thought.
I'll say there's one of many things, but one thing that this comic made me think about that I hadn't thought about before in a certain way. Some friends of ours are on a cruise right now, and I'm looking at them like, man, the life of a dink. which stands for double income, no kids. Like, having the money and having the free time, like, goddamn, I kind of miss that. Like, I'd been feeling that for, like, a week. But then in this comic, Tom Hart says something when they're going to stay with one of the couples and they're talking about art and all that kind of stuff. And he says, we've done this a million times, Leela and me, driving around, meeting people, talking art. But where is the life force that was constantly overflowing in our house 3 weeks ago? Why this rewind? And I love that quote because it's like, I don't know about your experience, David, but my experience as a father is that she came out of there and it's been non-fucking stop. Mm-hmm. And there's been no time to reflect. And for better, for better or worse, I've not had that time. It's just not something I've been able to do. And unfortunately, Tom Hart has the time now to reflect on his life before and now know what it's like again without Rosalie around. And he describes it as a rewind, and I like that because it's something that, like, I feel like I'm making progress in the development of another human being, and I'm raising a human being, and that's, like, work. But he mentions the life force too, and like the idea that going back to this life and like just, you know, having some wine and talking about art and spending time with friends when you wouldn't normally have it, like, that's great, but it feels like a rewind, and it feels like part of his life is gone backwards. And like, it's one of those things that I think when you're a parent, you're like, man, I wish I had time to do that. But the sacrifice that you would have to make to get that time is not worth it. It's just not. So like that, like I hadn't been thinking of it that way. And that line in this comic really like made me realize how I've been feeling for the last week or so. So thank you, Tom, for multiple things, including writing this beautiful, beautiful comic. You got anything, Jen?
Not really, actually. Not
after that. Are you okay?
Yes. I've had a cough, and it happens worse when
I appreciate
laugh.
That reaction.
I normally truncate silence when I do editing, and I'm just going to leave all of it in there, and it's just going to be a nice big pause, because it was perfect. Not really.
Nope, I got nothing.
That's great. Okay, that's it for this week. Let's move the fuck on. Next week we're going to read Joyride by Jackson Lansing. And this is Amazon's description called it a love letter to the sci-fi genre, which just sounds fantastic. It feels like dystopia meets Firefly and all this kind of amazing stuff. I cannot read this. I cannot wait to read this. And the art's by Marcus Toe. I love Marcus Toe. Toe, too? I don't know. I've always said Toe in my head, and I've never heard it pronounced, so I'm going to go Marcus Toe. I'm really excited to read this one. That's going to be the second and our best of the rest of 2016. And then, was that our 7th of 8? No, 6th of 8? 6th of 8, yes. Because we're cutting back on the best of the rest and best of 2016 this year. But if you want to know what we have coming up after that one, go to welcometocomics.com. And we have up past the 300th episode planned out already. We've got the next, 4 months planned out for y'all. So go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, hit future shows. It should all be up there, especially by the time you listen to this episode. And if you like what you've heard, which would be weird because this is a really sad episode, but if you got an experience from this episode that you enjoyed after reading this comic, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. Support us. If you sign up for even just a penny a month, you get access to our bonus content that comes out about once a month. It's all the extra minutes that happen before and after the show. I just kind of slap them all together and give it to you to enjoy listening to. So patreon.com/welcometocomics. Any level gets you all the bonus content. But the more you give, the more we love you back. Yes, my love is related to money. It's true. yeah, next week, Joyride by Jackson Lansing. Until then, everyone, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.